The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to NFL Live. Glad you're with us today. Lots of news to get to. Boomer joining us shortly to honor the great Gale Sayers. Keyshawn Johnson's here. Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears here with us as well. And we begin with a developing story around the Los Angeles Chargers. For that, we bring in Adam Schefter right away to get more. Chargers quarterback Tyrod Taylor dealing with a punctured lung. Adam, how did this happen?
What happened was on Sunday, Laura, there was a great deal of mystery as to why Justin Herbert started a game that nobody expected him to start. And what happened is that Tyrod Taylor was dealing with cracked ribs, two cracked ribs that he suffered in the opening week against the Bengals. The Chargers' doctors gave him a pain-killing injection to numb the area right before the game. And one of the doctors accidentally punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung. He had trouble breathing on the sideline. He went to the hospital that night. Doctors recommended that he shouldn't play this week, that he couldn't play this week. And so he's dealing with a lung injury that he's recovering from. He's dealing with cracked ribs that he's recovering from. And a short time ago, Anthony Lynn made it official and said that Justin Herbert will start this week. And it is a start that Herbert will know about in advance, unlike last week's NFL debut.
Yeah, we'll hear from Anthony Lynn in moments. And just a wild story all around. Dan, take us inside the trainer's room on the risk that a player has with these types of procedures, because you've had them done before.
Yeah, Laura, I've had this done three times. And every single time that I had it done, I was told beforehand, like, listen, there is the chance that this could happen. Very unlikely, but it was the doctor's kind of job to let me know that could happen. And I was, of course, going, don't care, give me the shot anyway. And so it wasn't necessarily a concern to me. I've seen other guys have this same shot as well, and them hear the same thing, that it could potentially happen. So this isn't shocking to me that it happened. It's unfortunate, all those things. But I've sat in that on that table before, and I knew what the risk was, and I still accepted it, just like I'm sure Tyrod did. So it's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, Anthony Lynn saying today that there are no hard feelings from Tyrod. We'll continue to follow this story. But as Adam mentioned, Lynn also confirming this reporting at his press conference moments ago. He did address who would be the starting quarterback this week. Take a listen.
You guys all know by now about Tyrod's information. Like I told you Monday, there was complications with his shot. He would not be 100% this week, so therefore he would not play. Justin Herbert will start at quarterback. I'm looking forward to seeing him play with a week of preparation, knowing that he's going to be the starter.
Yeah, Justin Herbert just launched into this whole situation as he ends up sending the Chargers into overtime against the Super Bowl champs. And really, Keyshawn played quite well for them in this game. What about the idea that Justin Herbert could continue to build on his performance from Sunday, play well in a starting role, and maybe Tyrod Taylor doesn't get his job back?
If I'm a betting man, Tyrod Taylor will not get his job back. When you look at Justin Herbert, like you mentioned, Laura, he played extremely well against the Super Bowl champs in Kansas City. Dan, when you talk about a guy losing his job at the position, Tyrod Taylor, this has happened to him many times in his short career in the NFL. Justin Herbert, 311 yards, a touchdown, though he did throw an ill-advised pick. They got the Panthers next. They play the Bucks. They a struggling somewhat Saint team. The Jets. And then the Dolphins. So if Tyrod Taylor's out a little bit there and he goes on some sort of run, I can certainly see within that locker room players start to say, hold on a little bit, TT. Put a little more ice on those ribs for right now.
Marcus, the player perspective in this, if you're in that locker room and you see the success that the young Herbert had, what are you thinking right now?
Well, the first week was very impressive. I know the players in that locker room are like, man, we might have something here. But also you have to account for that now a team is going to use a week of preparation getting ready to stop Justin Herbert. And I've told you guys before, when you have a new quarterback come in, especially in a situation like that where you've scouted, you've practiced, you've ran through the plays that you expected to get from Tyrod Taylor, a backup, especially with super athleticism, can take advantage of some of those things. I'm not trying to take anything away from Justin Herbert. He was magnificent against the Kansas City Chiefs. But now let's see how he responds runs when a team is all focused on Justin Herbert and getting him stopped and not letting him be effective. And then you start to build some momentum. Like he mentioned, the teams that they play, he starts to build some momentum, starts to play well, get some wins, make some amazing plays and does some extraordinary things, then definitely they'll have to keep him in that spot. This is a competition-based business. This is what it's about. If Justin Herbert gives the indication that he gives the Chargers the best chance to win and compete in every game, Tyrod won't play anymore.
Yeah, those are good points, Marcus. And I can counter it with saying, like, just as much as the defense is now going to prepare for Justin Herbert, he gets a full week of really getting accustomed to their game plan. We all know that game plans get very specific, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. It actually makes me think of to that fourth and one play in overtime when Anthony Lynn decided to punt for it. With Justin Herbert, now maybe they will have fourth and one plans quarterback run-wise built in because of that. They were probably unprepared for that situation to begin with. Listen, this defense is built to be a division champion in Los Angeles. They've got a really good skill group with Eckler and Hunter Henry and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. They're not going to ask Justin Herbert to do a ton. And so I think it's more likely that he remains their starting quarterback for the future.
Okay, Shefty, the thing that just keeps coming to my mind here is how often this seems to happen to Tyrod Taylor, where something unfortunate happens and he loses his job. Just what are the Chargers saying about the prospects of his job going forward?
Laura, you heard Anthony Lynn say that if Tyrod Taylor were healthy and he were 100%, he would be the team's starting quarterback. And they were hoping that he'd be recovered to play in time for this game, because Dan was exactly right in what he said on that fourth down play. If Tyrod Taylor is in the game, they're going for it, because he's been through the reps in practice. He's been through the have-to-have-it plays that they take in practice. Justin Herbert didn't run those plays, and so he doesn't know what to do at that point in time. So Tyrod Taylor being on the bench changed the way that they approached the game. And I think that they believe that they are more likely to make a playoff run this season with a veteran who doesn't turn over the football, who doesn't make mistakes. And if we go back and look at Tyrod Taylor's career, this is the story of his career. Yeah. Every time he seems to get an opportunity to start, something happens that gets in the way of it. There's some sort of injury, some sort of strange circumstance, but no circumstance as strange as the one where his own team doctor punctures his lung right before the opening kickoff with an injection designed to numb the pain from the ribs, the crack ribs injury that he played through the week before in Cincinnati.
That's very, very unfortunate on the situation with the punctured lung. But if you think about it, go back to Baker Mayfield and go to Cleveland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They drafted Baker Mayfield to be the quarterback. The Chargers drafted Justin Herbert to be the quarterback. Tyrod is there basically as a veteran guy, that's a stopgap guy that says, hey, we need you to teach him more so in the classroom and show him how to be a professional. The clock has sped up for him now.
Sure.
And
right.
Once you start winning over that locker room and showing that you can lead a team, those players will wrap their arms around you and want to follow you, and I think Justin Herbert has that.
It's going to be fascinating to see how he performs with that extra time that their opponent will have to prepare for him. Let's get more on injuries and updates around the league with Shefty, and we begin in San Francisco for this.
Yeah, Lord, no team was more battered than the 49ers. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo didn't go through practice today. At the same time, Kyle Shanahan said Tevin Coleman would likely go on IR, could miss about 4 weeks in time. So it was a devastating weekend for the 49ers as the hits continue to come. Christian McCaffrey officially placed on IR today. No surprise to anybody. He himself said he expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. And it's important to remember that once you go on IR, you are required to miss at least 3 weeks. So McCaffrey will be sidelined for a good month. And as for Julio Jones, he aggravated a hamstring injury in Sunday's game against the Dallas Cowboys. He did not participate in practice. They'll monitor that hamstring going forward to see whether he can play Sunday against the Chicago Bears. But right now, they don't know whether he can. I should add one other injury note. Byron Jones, the excellent Dolphins cornerback, ruled out of tomorrow night's game due to a groin and Achilles injury.
Hearts are heavy around the NFL today as we remember an all-time great, Gale Sayers. He's passed away at the age of 77. Here's Trey Wingo with more on the Hall of Famer.
In football, it's often said the best ability is available. That's why they call the greats those whose greatness has stood the test of time, who have longevity to their name. So what do you call those greats who don't have longevity? You call them Gale Sayers.
Give me 18 inches of daylight. That's all I need.
Gale Sayers only played 7 seasons in the NFL. In each of his last 2 seasons, he only played 2 games. But his Canton qualities were never in question.
None of the moves that I had on the football field, I worked on. Only thing I did was to get myself in shape. But once on the football field, I just let instinct take over. It was God-given talent.
Nicknamed the Kansas Comet after his alma mater and his speed, Sayers burst onto the scene his rookie year in the NFL, tying a league record with 6 touchdowns in a single game against the 49ers.
When I woke up that morning, it was raining. And when we got to the field, it was in bad condition, and it seemed like everybody was slipping but me. And every time I touched the football, you know, I had good footing, and it was just one of those days that happens once in a lifetime.
Now, Sayers' career was derailed by major knee injuries, but his talent was undeniable. In 1977, he became the youngest player ever inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame at the tender age of 34.
And I left a long time before I wanted to leave. I wanted to play 10 years. I played 68 ball games. But I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And I did my thing. I was made to play the game.
How best to describe what Sayers did on the field? Well, at his Hall of Fame induction ceremony, Bears founder and his coach, George Halas, called him the likes of which we will never see again.
Gale Sayers, magic in motion. Teammates admired and respected him because he is always razor sharp physically. If you wish to see perfection, you had best get a hold of a film of Gale Sayers.
In 1994, Sayers was named to the NFL's 75th anniversary team, both as a running back and a kick returner, the only player to be named at 2 positions. Sadly, in his post-NFL life, Sayers battled dementia. His brother Roger said that it was tough to build all those memories all your life, and the next thing you know, you don't remember any of them. Thankfully, though, the grace and fluidity with which he ran will live on forever.
And we welcome Boomer into the conversation here. And just a reminder to everybody, this studio that we're in right now is named after you and TJ. As you reflect on Gale Sayers and his life, and when you heard the news about his passing, you knew him personally. What can you tell us about who he was as a person?
As a person, he was better than he was a player. I know that's a cliche, Laura, but Gale had a smile. Every time you saw him at the Hall of Fame, and he went every year being the ultimate teammate of the Hall of Famers. You said, Gale, you look like you can still play. Yeah. No, I can't. Yes, you can. His friendship with Brian Piccolo, of course, which is well-founded movie book, I Am Third, speaks for itself. He won the George Halas Comeback Player of the Year Award in 1969 after the knee surgery. He gave it to Piccolo, like, no. I don't get that. You're battling cancer. So Gale is a person like that, and he always made you feel more important than him, and it's Gale Sayers. So that as a person, look, I can only imagine what it was to be his teammate, but I saw him at Canton, and I know what it was like. He was a leader of those guys. All the running backs, they flooded Jim Brown, they flooded Gale, all the ones in the Hall of Fame. So that was respect in addition to ability, no question.
Just watching you watch some of those highlights that we just saw, you can see how you react to them. What was he like as a player? How can you put that into perspective?
Well, no one had ever seen anybody like him when he came as a rookie in 65, NFL style. Look at the cuts. Barry Sanders, he was Barry before Barry Sanders. And there are no other players that I can think of that made you miss, that made the moves in the 100 years that we've had in the NFL. I thought about this driving over a little bit today, and it's fitting that the only other one, a little before my time, okay, Red Grange was a little before my time, because at the time he was, all this, and fittingly a Chicago Bear like Gale. Gale was, well, the fact, and you heard Trey say it, the youngest player ever elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame still, well, that speaks for itself. Who knows what he would have amassed had he played 10, 12 years. He really only played 5. But it was, you smiled when you watch him. The Bears weren't any good, Laura. Let's remember, they won nothing. I mean, they didn't. Not nothing. But you smiled when you got to watch him play. He's a highlight reel. So for you youngsters out there, I mean, who remember Barry Sanders, Barry would be the first to say, oh, no. Gale Sayers. We smile, but we're very sad. And it's Chicago, of course, the whole city mourning. But it's really all of football. Because Gale Sayers at 70 looked like he was 40 with his smile, with his attitude. And he played football that way in his 20s.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Got to give a shout out to our colleague at ESPN, Andy Wall, for pointing this out. Look at February 2020, Bill Belichick in the nice red blazer. And then today, this is what he looked like at his press conference. A little more casual, right? What's going on here? Marcus, what's going on? I'll let you go first.
It's 2020 in a nutshell, Laura. I mean, that's where we need to leave it at. Like, we're looking at Bill Belichick as the embodiment of how this damn year has been going. So do you, Bill. I respect it.
His sweatshirt kind of tells us exactly how this year's gone. Listen, Bill Belichick's a football guy. No one should be surprised by this. He's crunching tape to figure out how to win this week. So I don't expect – it's actually something I love about Belichick.
Bill could care less about what he looks like, trust me.
It looked like a moth got to the collar there. I don't know what's going on with that. All right, that's enough of that. Tons of other huge games this week. Let's get some quick reads in. Packers and Saints. Key, you think this game's a swing on one player?
I do. I honestly do. I think it's the swing on my nephew, Michael Thomas. If he's in the lineup, Drew Brees is a totally different quarterback in terms of catch radius, targets. If you look at that game this past week against the Raiders, he was missing him big time. The interesting thing is the doctor from the Green Bay Packers is the doctor that's probably going to give Michael clearance to play in this game. It happens to be the doctor of the team they're playing Sunday.
Ooh, little inside info there. All right, Marcus, give us something to watch for in the Cowboys-Seahawks game.
Zeke and Jamal Adams. Look, Jamal hovers. We absolutely know he's a tackling machine at this point, and Zeke is going to run physical. If you guys remember, Zeke made his name against the Seattle Seahawks when he kept seeking out Cam Chancellor, and we know what kind of hitter Cam Chancellor was. So this will be a great matchup between two young stars.
Dan, two of your favorite QBs in the Rams and Bills matchup.
Now this is going to be another step for Josh Allen in this MVP campaign to start this season. I expect him to be really good with the football in between the hashes. Dawson Knox, their tight end. Cole Beasley, the slot receiver. Josh Allen's going to work them early and often. Jalen Ramsey's probably going to be on Stephon Diggs. So I expect him to have a big day, just being efficient with the football, and I expect the Bills to win.
Yeah, Josh Allen squarely on the Dan wagon. And, Dan, you really may be onto something with all this Josh Allen talk. Allen has 804 yards this season, passing and rushing, which is more than 22 teams. And it's only been 2 weeks. But still, he's outgaining some of the NFL's best offenses, including the Ravens, Chiefs, Steelers, 49ers, Saints, and Buccaneers. Did you see all those teams on that list? Pretty impressive. All right, can't talk big week three matchups without mentioning Monday Night Football. Patrick Mahomes and the 2-0 Chiefs take on Lamar Jackson and the 2-0 Ravens. It's 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Our coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown at 6. According to Elias, this will be the third game in Monday Night Football history in which the reigning MVP takes on the reigning Super Bowl champions. The previous two featured Peyton Manning squaring off against Tom Brady and the Patriots in 2005, and Brett Favre taking on Troy Aikman and the Cowboys. Now, speaking of Favre, Andy Reid spent some time with him in Green Bay and brought up the old gunslinger when discussing Mahomes. Take a listen.
When I had a chance to listen to those two, just sit back and listen to them when they did that little TV deal, I'm going, oh my God, these guys, they think alike. When that football's in their hand, it's the same thought process. They both have phenomenal vision, just like fighter pilot vision. They see everything. And then they're going to rip your heart out, man. I mean, they're every throw, they're going to try to gut you. I felt like I was 20 years younger when they were talking. It was crazy.
Key and Boomer, two old friends over there. What do you think of what Reed had to say?
I think he's on point. I mean, you know Andy very well. You know Mike Holmgren. You know Brett Favre. And you have some familiarity with Patrick Mahomes. So do you think, though, that they're very similar and close?
Well, as far as they can make every throw, right? And they're not afraid to try it. Brett earlier on was a little more interesting.
Here's a football interception.
They can make every throw. They think they can win every game, and no matter what the situation. I'm not saying they're the only two. You know, Andy was quarterback coach on the staff with young Brett. When Brett came to the Packers, he was in his second year, hardly played with Atlanta. So, in other words, he started right away. And remember, Patrick sat 1 year behind Alex Smith. Even though he could see what Patrick was, they each had 1 year to observe the NFL, and they started, here you go, in year number two. So there's a similarity.
He reminds me a lot of him. Like I said, the one thing that I take away from that is the interception. Brett will give you a couple in a heartbeat. Patrick Mahomes is not doing that. He's not turning the ball over. He's not putting his team in a position like Brett was doing, costing him at times in his career. Now, he's a Hall of Famer. There's no question about it. I just remember Tony Dungy always telling our defense, he's going to give you a couple. Just catch him.
The game's a little different now. It was more precise. I mean, not saying that Brett played in the 60s. people, we got to remember that, right, Key? Completion percentages are higher now, other than the Steve Young back then all the time. But here's one thing that Andy didn't say in there. And I remember when Mahomes was starting his very first year, like just a couple years ago already with the Chiefs. So what does he have about him that we don't know? He said, leadership. I said, wait a minute, we've not really seen him lead. He goes, no. I'm talking about training camp, his second year when Alex was gone, and he's the start. Leadership. Brett had leadership.
Yeah.
Both of the you know what it's like to be in a huddle with a guy like that, or some of your guys. Not all of them. But we would follow him anywhere. And I think they have a little sparkle in their eye when the going gets tougher. Brett gave you a few.
You know what? You're in trouble, though. I was thinking as we were sitting here in Monday night game, two teams, Kansas City, Baltimore. You don't have to tell me. I already know he has to pick one of them, Laura. He'll tell me on
the side. I do know those coaches. Well, by the way, one little thought. Bill Belichick told me years ago, the Army-Navy store, on back to the beginning of your segment, that was his Neiman Marcus. So why Wesleyan down the street from where we are, why would we think that that was out of character for Bill?
No, that is true.
I love it. Hey, so great to have Boomer on set with us today. And if you want more from him, well, of course you do. Check out NFL Primetime, where he and Booger McFarland take you through all the NFL highlights. It's Sunday, 7:30 Eastern, only on ESPN Plus. The show available to stream each week. So, Boom, we can watch it anytime we want, Monday through Wednesday, on any device that you choose to get ESPN Plus. Download the app or go to ESPNPlus.com. Thank you so much, Chris Berman, for joining us today. We appreciate you. Let's get to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady getting his first win as a Buck and did some nice things in the game. But here's the thing. His quarterback coach, Clyde Christensen, talking to the media about Brady and the offense. Take a listen to this.
It's clearly still a work in progress. I've said before that, at times it looks like, he's a guy running somebody else's offense. Each week, each day, it gets closer to him running his offense, our offense.
Dan Orlovsky, thoughts?
Well, whose offense is it? Is it his offense or is it the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Bruce Arians' offense? I remember distinctly when Tom Brady chose to go to Tampa Bay, Jeff Darlington, who broke that, came on television, said one of the main reasons was because Tom Brady wanted to be a part of a collaboration. And Bruce Arians had told him this was going to be a collaborative effort. And so if it truly is going to be that, then it should look like Tom Brady's starting to run his offense. If you go back to last week's first half, it looks like New England of old, the way Tom Brady's going, okay, ball's not there, out of my hands, check down. We're going to continue to move that football forward. Okay, screen game, something he leads the NFL in the last 6 years throwing the screen pass. We saw a little bit more of that. And then strategic football, situational football, turnover, double move, shot. How about a ball out of my hands quickly on the third and short? That's exactly what Tom Brady's done for a long time. So if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm Clyde Christensen, who I know and I love, and I'm Bruce Arians, I'm going, I want that. That's what I want my offense to look like. So this shouldn't be something where it's like we're trying to steer him towards running the Bucs offense. Remember, years ago, Peyton Manning went to Denver. Gary Kubiak was his head coach. And I remember early on in that situation, Kubes was trying to get Peyton to run his offense. Under center, hardball play action, wide zone fakes, all those layered throws. They were terrible. And then eventually Gary Kubiak said, no more of this, Peyton take over. And that's when the Broncos went on their run to win the Super Bowl. That's what the Bucs need to do with Tom Brady.
First of all, we're not going to continue to sit on this show and act like Dan don't look like he had a real rough day of trading on Wall Street. That's number one, with that damn collar popped up like that.
First of all, it's cold here, bro.
Listen, I got to get that.
He's insulated.
I got to get that out the way.
Thank
collar up to your ears. That's a big man studio temperature in there, by the way. But to Dan's point, the thing that this is perplexing to me. Like, these are things that we thought about Tom Brady and Bruce Arians that were already understood and predetermined. Dan alluded to what Jeff Darlington said, but any conventional mind, any conventional wisdom would tell you the guy that has had this amount of success playing the quarterback position for this long should have a lot to say about how they want to run and operate the offense upon agreement to leave where he's been for 20 years winning Super Bowls to come to a new spot. This, look, don't let me find out that Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are trying to impose an offense on Tom Brady that Tom Brady doesn't feel comfortable running, because it will literally be the dumbest thing I've heard in the NFL in all of my years. Now, I don't think that's the case, and I know they working kinks out, but they need to hurry up and get this figured out, right, about how they want to go about playing offensive football.
Dan, real fast, doesn't it feel like all these Bucs coaches are talking a lot right now? Like, it just feels like we're hearing something else about Tom Brady and this offense every other day from them that may not be totally positive.
Yeah, it doesn't make me comfortable. It doesn't, because this should be something that they're working through privately. Listen, you could be very transparent about your quarterback, but you don't have to constantly go, you know what, he did better in practice than he was in the game, or looks like he's not doing exactly what we're asking him to do. I always had coaches tell us, like, a coach would come up and be like, I'm never going to rip you in public. I'll rip you in private as much as needed, but you don't constantly kind of question or challenge, especially a guy like accomplished like Tom Brady. And I'd say this to the coaches in Tampa Bay and the front office. Did you bring Tom Brady there so he could learn your offense? Or did you bring Tom Brady there so you can win the Super Bowl? The way to win the Super Bowl is let him run his offense.
All right, before we go, we are going to, Marcus, make Dan feel more comfortable. We're going to pop our collars. I need you to join me, Marcus. I need you to pop your collar.
Yeah, you don't listen, maybe, and don't let people think that that's a real beard. That's spray painted. That's a spray painted beard.
This is a look right here. Glad you're with us on NFL Live today. How about some 0-2 teams that can turn it around? Let's give some people some hope right here. We begin with you, Keyshawn. What about the Eagles? You think they can turn it around?
I think they can. When you look at the Eagles' schedule and you think about what they can do, not only the schedule, but also the division. The division is not very good. I think the Dallas Cowboys are probably the toughest team within that division. Washington's not very good. We know what the Giants are. If they can get that offensive line fixed and they can figure out how to get the football down the field, something Carson Wentz can do, they can turn things around.
Yeah, Jalen Reagor dealing with an injury for them for a couple weeks. That's big. Marcus, how about the Texans?
It's tough. I hate saying this, but I don't think they get it turned around, Laura. And it's not all about them not getting better as a team. It's about what they have coming up. I hate not having faith in Deshaun Watson because he does extraordinary things. But their schedule is brutal coming up. And based on the weapons that they have on the outside, I just don't foresee them being able to compete at a high level. We see it right here. Steelers coming up. Vikings and the Jaguars are win, maybe wins, but Titans, Packers. And then Jaguars follow up. And the Jags and Minshew have been pushing people.
All right, well, we do have good news and some bad news if you're a Texans fan to piggyback off of what Marcus just said, let's start with the good news. In 2018, Deshaun Watson actually led the Texans to the playoffs after an 0-3 start. He was just 23 then. The bad news, that's quite a rare feat. Just 2% of the teams to start 0-3 made that impressive climb back into the postseason. And how about what's going on in the desert? Man, this has been a whole lot of fun to watch the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray getting it done so far this season. He's doing it with his legs. He's doing it with his arms. He's enjoying having DeAndre Hopkins in the fold. And his teammates are taking notice. Here's his teammate, Patrick Peterson, about Murray's it factor.
He's one of those guys that have that it factor. And it's a pleasure to call him our quarterback and watch him grow as well, because I truly, truly believe, you know, if he continues to keep that mentality and that mindset that he have, he definitely, definitely at some point will bring a Super Bowl here, you know, if he's still playing with the Cardinals. Like, that's how confident I am in him, and that's how confident he is in himself as well.
All right, Marcus, your LSU boy, Patrick Peterson, with high praise and setting the bar really high for Kyler Murray there, saying that he thinks he's going to win a Super Bowl for Arizona. What do you make of him setting the bar that high?
I feel like every time we talk about Kyler Murray, I need to go on a damn apology tour, because I totally missed on him turning into what he's doing. And I will continue. No, shout out to Kyler, man. But listen, this is the validation. Look, we in media, people on the outside can always deem leader, face of the franchise. We throw those words around. But in the vicinity of that locker room, the respect from your vets is the only thing that matters. Keyshawn was a vet when I came into Dallas. That matters when your vets tell you, hey, man, you're ascending, you're playing well, you're carrying yourself the right way. We will follow you. You can take us where we need to go. That's the validation that a young quarterback loves to hear, based on his work ethic, his play, and obviously producing. But when you hear that coming from veterans, when you hear a guy like Patrick Peterson, who's had a tremendous amount of success in this league with his own right, you got Larry Fitzgerald on that team as well. And Kyler Murray is the face of that franchise. You just signed DeAndre Hopkins. But for him to say that and vouch for him like that, that's when you know you have your guy at quarterback.
Well, it's interesting, because I feel like the obvious key is that DeAndre Hopkins adds so much for Kyler Murray as a weapon. Is it all about that, though, in your mind?
I think when you look at Kyler Murray, there was never any doubt that Kyler Murray could run this offense and be effective within this offense in the National Football League. The long-term effect, though. Can this offense expand when the weather starts to change, when you go on the road in the playoffs? That's cute and adorable, everything that he said. Make the damn tackles in the secondary. When you got Jamal Adams in Seattle, is he going to make that tackle, or is he going to miss that tackle? When you start to think about the – now, look, they can start off 5-0 with the teams that they got coming down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But then they get to the Dallases and then the Seattles. That's when you really start to see if this is a team that can make a deep run into the playoffs or even have an opportunity to win the division. I don't think so. Because I think it puts too much pressure on their defense. If them three and outs start to happen, they're in trouble.
Who is the best team in that division then, in the NFC West?
It's Seattle. Yeah. Then it's the Rams. Then it's Arizona, because San Francisco is broken down.
Hmm. Interesting stuff. Mm. All right, we've got more coming your way on NFL Live.
Man, you seen what the Rams did to your Eagles. You better be quiet, boy.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
He is quiet right now.
Boy.
Today, so many mourning the loss of Gale Sayers, the Hall of Famer, who had an incredible career and was an amazing man. He was drafted fourth overall by the Bears in 1965 after becoming a two-time All-American at Kansas University. The Kansas Comet went on to earn first-team All-Pro honors in each of his first five seasons in the NFL. Only three other players in the history of the game have ever done that. At his Hall of Fame induction, George Halas said of Sayers, quote, "If you wish to see perfection as a running back, you had best get a hold of film of Gale Sayers. He was poetry in motion. His like will never be seen again." As we reflect on Gale Sayers, I want to get everyone's opinion here. Let's start with you, Shefty. What do you want to say about Sayers, his impact on the NFL?
Well, Gale Sayers was the running back that I always heard about as a child. My father always told me the two greatest running backs he ever saw were Jim Brown and Gale Sayers. The movie that was as good as any I saw as a kid was Brian's Song, which featured Gale Sayers and Billy Dee Williams starring as Gale Sayers. How cool do you have to be to have that happen? Later on, when I covered the Denver Broncos, Terrell Davis, the Hall of Fame running back, his career was mostly compared to Gale Sayers. And I had the chance to meet and speak with Gale Sayers over the phone and then in Canton, Ohio at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was professional. He was courteous. He was kind. He was generous. He was a great man, and he will be missed. May he rest in peace.
Yeah, you know when you're young and you don't really understand the game, you're just playing it. And my dad was the one that introduced me to Gale Sayers and tells me that how smooth he was. That's what my dad used to say. He was super smooth. But also I've learned something over time that legends kind of make you forget about time. And the fact that Gale didn't play and have a long career but ended up in Canton and got that Hall of Fame jacket, and now you talk about legends being able to span across all eras of sports, I think that's the most respect you can pay to Gale Sayers as the football player, is the fact that his game would have translated in any era, even the one that we talk about today with all of these guys playing and with these immeasurable talents that they have. So that's what I remember. I remember my dad introducing me to him. I've heard everyone talk about his personality, his character, and how good of a guy he was. So that's a great way you want to be remembered. And it seems like Gale Sayers lived up to everything he had, everything he was blessed with.
Yeah, I wasn't fortunate enough to watch Gale Sayers play. I was born about a dozen years later, but the best college football player I ever saw in my life was Reggie Bush. And I just remember when Reggie Bush was coming out, everyone kept saying he's the closest thing they had seen to Gale Sayers. And for him to be so unbelievable on the field and dominant and kind of just once in a generation type of player, it kind of put into perspective for me what Gale Sayers was on the football field, just absolute poetry in motion. So Reggie Bush was the first person to lead me towards going, man, Gale Sayers was a baller.
Much like Adam, for me, it's the movie. It's the TV movie. It's the Brian song. It's understanding Brian Piccolo. As a kid, a black teammate putting his arms around a white teammate who had cancer, who was going to pass away for that, putting that speech together, especially, you know, as you reflect on everything that's going on in our country today, to think back in the 60s, doing all of the civil rights issues that we had back then, it's like crazy that it's all coming back full circle to this time and era where we are now. Mm-hmm. People should actually go back and have an opportunity to find that, watch it, and see the way they reacted and try to put that into your lives today.
Also, some great perspective today from Chris Berman. We thank him for that. And as we say goodbye today, we leave you with more reflections on Gale Sayers, his amazing career, and his lifetime from across our ESPN family.
There's nobody like him. There's not been anybody like him, which is why if you talk to people of a certain age who are old enough to have seen Gale Sayers, they'll tell you, they'll say, I don't care how many games he played, you have to see him.
He was kind of the first Christian McCaffrey. He was the first Alvin Kamara. He was a guy that returned kicks and did other things. And so he was an amazing part of our history of this league, an amazing part of our history as black men and as black players. And so it's truly a sad day, but a day that we get an opportunity to remember a legend and speak about a man who was one of the greatest running backs to play this game.
Gale was the youngest player ever elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, still. Well, that speaks for itself. Who knows what he would have amassed had he played 10, 12 years? We smile, but we're very sad. And it's Chicago, of course, the whole city mourning. But it's really all of football.